Mike, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jordan. Thank you so much for having me here with you.
Yeah, I'm pumped to have you. I was doing my workout this morning. By the way, my wife is going to kill me. I'm like out of breath and like sweating right now. And it's not because I just worked out. I'm like sweating. I'm like out of breath. I just spent the last like 15 minutes cleaning a stainless steel pan, like bringing it back to life, like boiling it with like baking soda. And then my wife comes down and I'm like scrubbing like crazy. She's like, why are you so sweaty? I'm like, I am putting work into, I'm going to be sore tomorrow from cleaning this pan. So I'm going to catch my breath for a sec. But when I think of people that I want to have on the podcast, it's not so dichotomous, but I think of people that have, it's kind of like a what they say versus how they say it. So I have some people on the podcast because of a what they say. There's experts in their field, you know, somebody who's just done research on a topic. They're incredibly in the know. They're going to give a lot of good information to the listener, to me, from an education standpoint. And then there's the how you say it people, where it's like, I need to get this person on the podcast just because I really like how they say things. And maybe it's not like, you know, we're talking about molecular biology, but maybe we're saying something that everyone has said before, but finally clicks. And I'm not saying you're not the first person who like has, you know, a lot of information, and I'm sure you do, and you're educated on topics you talk about, fine. But you are absolutely a how you say it person, and somebody who I find incredibly insightful is the word I would use. And so no pressure for dropping some insightful quotes here, but I find you really insightful. You are very much a how you say it person. You know, I find myself looking through your content being like, yeah, those are things I've thought and said, but you're saying it better. And so I really do appreciate it. And you know, I guess on that topic, is that something that you feel like comes naturally to you? Do you agree with my assessment of your qualities?
Having to say anything good about myself is incredibly difficult. I think maybe some people would find that to be surprising about me, that it's I have trouble talking kindly to myself, even though that's what I'm always telling people to do. But that's kind of why it strikes me so closely and why I talk about it so often, is because I need to hear it too. And I know that there are other people just like me who really need to hear it as well. I didn't quite realize just how impactful the kindness message would be to people who are trying to lose weight, or because I have an equal amount of people who aren't trying to lose weight. I just have people who are coming, like when I started coaching, the first few people that booked a call with me had no weight to lose at all. They just wanted to speak more kindly to themselves. And that was really surprising to me. But yeah, when it comes to the molecular biology stuff too, like I read into that myself. I know about it, not as much as obviously many other people, but I don't really find it quite as interesting as all the mindset stuff. That's the stuff that really changed everything for me.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit. That's going to be the basis of today's whole podcast. Let's do a little bit of background, your story, the classic, who's Mike? How did he get into fitness? How did he get into coaching? And then that'll be a nice segue into some stuff afterwards.
Yeah, so this is, I lost 110 pounds for anyone who hasn't heard of me, but I'm most proud of keeping the weight off. That's the thing that has really changed my life, because I'm really good at losing weight. I think a lot of people listening to us are good at losing weight and don't realize that they are, because they're probably yelling, no, I'm not. I'm not good at losing weight because I've still got all this weight to lose. No, if every time you set your mind to losing 20 pounds, you do it. It's just a matter of you do it a lot because it comes back. So I'm most proud of keeping the weight off, because it means I don't have to lose the weight again. You got to get good at keeping it off, not losing it. So that's what it's going to come down to more than just calories and all that. This is a hot take, I think, and feel free to call me out on it. I think everything that you need to know about the weight loss process, in terms of, you know, just biologically speaking, administering it, can be taught to someone in like 10 weeks. All in. It's beyond that. It is implementation, sustainability, mindset, all the kind of stuff that, you know, a good trainer, a good coach, a good therapist are going to provide. But like, if you're looking for the the right food constantly, if you're looking for the right exercise constantly, you're never going to find it. It's a matter of finding the one that you're going to enjoy the longest. So that's what I do, trying to help people find a lifestyle they enjoy.
Yeah, you said 10 weeks. I wouldn't call you out on that. I'd call you out for overstating or understating how quickly that could be. I'm not saying that there aren't things in the margins that can, you know, strategies, pieces of information. I mean, listen, we all know that education isn't enough to cause behavior change. Just knowing things does not. And now knowing, you know, education is a piece of the puzzle. You know, I think it's helpful to, you know, it's helpful to know certain things about nutrition and dieting and calories. And, you know, there's certainly helpful pieces of information, like it does come down to energy balance. It's not a specific food. I mean, there are certain pieces of information along the way that are going to make this process a whole lot easier that people hire you for sure. But I agree with you. You can get somebody to the point where they understand the nuts and bolts of fat loss, body composition change, exercise in a short period of time. It is not, it's really not. Education and information is a thing, but it's certainly not the primary gap between where you are and where you'd like to be most of the time.
Do you tend to find that people come to you knowing a lot of that stuff, but still having trouble losing weight in any way?
Oh, absolutely.
Like you get self-proclaimed experts. I know how to lose it. I know about the nutrition part of it. I know how to track, but I can't keep the weight off. These aren't dumb people.
Yeah,
it's not a lack of ability. It's just a lack of knowing where to focus that ability.
What is something that you did? My assumption is this wasn't your first weight loss attempt. So my question is, what was different this time?
So I'm not quite sure where to start. I'll start at the first time I tried to lose weight, and then the last time I tried to lose weight, and give you a little, you know, a stark contrast of it. So the first time that I had tried to lose weight, it wasn't so much of, I need to change things now. Things have gone too far. I was just handed a bottle of kefir probiotic by a friend, and he had said, hey, you know, this helps with cravings. And I'm like, what's a craving? It was just like the way that I ate. It was just the way that I ate. I didn't think about it all that much, but I tried it, and it turns out it works, not in the way that I think maybe he intended, but in the sense that kefir probiotic is disgusting and made me not want to eat ever again.
It's a deterrent.
So, yeah. Yeah, it was a deterrent. It's a very short-lived deterrent, but it was enough to make me realize in that moment, maybe I can do something to change the shape of my body. Maybe I can control how this thing goes. And I just knew that I had to eat less and move more. So I did, but I did it kind of wrong. I basically stopped eating and started biking like 30 miles a day, which at that higher weight, I guess I was able to handle for a little bit. And I lost 35, 40 pounds that summer pretty quickly, because that's what happens when you start. It comes off real quick. And then winter came along. This is when it used to get cold. Doesn't do that anymore. But it was the first time that I dealt with weight regain. All came back, all of it. And that wrecked me. Over the summer, I had a great mindset about it. Everything was good. The weight was going down. I didn't realize it could come back. And that was the start of about 6 years of just torturing my body in every way I could think of to try to get the weight back off again. It was really, really bad. And so let's fast forward 6 years. I had survived starving myself over long periods of time. I had done keto 3 or 4 times, cut everything out of my diet. My self-talk had gotten, I'd said things to myself that I couldn't imagine saying to another human being. And I was, for scale, I'm 6'3". I was 155 pounds. That's, for those of you doing the quick math at home, not good. I was, functionally speaking, I was on a path to not being here anymore if I had kept going the way that I was. But I still thought in my head I was fat. So luckily, the fact that I'm a hypochondriac saved my life because eventually I ran the numbers and figured out, like, oh no, if I keep doing this, I'm out of here. I have to stop. So my turnaround moment, the reason I mention all this is because I think people had assumed I had that indignant, like, I'm going to turn everything around moment when I was at my heaviest. It was when I had lost all of the weight and realized that there wasn't happiness on the other end. Whatever it was I was looking for wasn't there. I had to keep going, and it had nothing to do with the number on the scale. So, yeah, that's really my story. And then there's just a lot of pain in the middle. And that's what I try to save other people from dealing with now, because it's what they're working for often isn't the thing they're trying to get.
So I love that this is a shift in perspective of, like, I didn't decide to, you know, pull on my boots, tighten up my belt, get to work when I was overweight. It was hey man, I've lost all this weight. I'm in a trajectory that I'm acknowledging is not great. And it didn't do what I hoped it would, happiness wise. And so it was in that moment that you felt, well, I need to act on that. I don't necessarily want to say, yeah, I had to change a bunch of things, which I'm sure, you know, it's in there you did. But it was more like, hey, I need to be aware of what just happened, which is like, weight loss didn't fix it. Now, I think there's going to be a hypothetical / actual person yelling at their earbuds of like, yeah, but like, easy for you to say, person who has now lost weight and is now thin, you know? And so, like, oh, easy for you to say your life didn't get any better. Like, here I am overweight. That's all I want. And so do you, not saying pushback, you know, but like, do you feel like there's some people that are like, maybe I will say in denial, but I think that's coming along a little strong, in denial of the fact that it most likely isn't the happiness, it most likely isn't the utopia of happiness that you're looking for, because I think that there, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, there's probably shreds of stuff that did get better, right? Maybe somewhere in there that you could say, okay, this was the good stuff. Let's still lean into this. This was the, you know, stuff that I was hoping was going to get better that didn't. Let's work on that.
I wish everybody who wanted to lose a significant amount of weight could have the body that they get at the end of it for a day. Just a single day before they start with the same mindset that they have going into it, so that they can see that the body doesn't change anything. It may improve certain physical circumstances. You may feel a little bit better about yourself, but if you're not working on your body, on your mind, as you work on your body, you get down to the bottom and you realize that all you did was remove. You cannot remove to improve. We have to add things to improve things. We've got some bad habits that we'll be getting rid of along the way. I myself was eating 10 to 12,000 calories a day. I was torturing my body in different ways at the time. I'd be at McDonald's 3 times a day. I used to go to Papa John's. I'd order a large meat lover's pizza, and I'd tell them not to slice it. Because if you waited about 10 minutes for the cheese to set, you could roll it up like a burrito and eat it that way. 4,500 calories. I did that a couple times a week. That was not a lifestyle I enjoyed. That was not a thing I enjoyed. It was just the only thing I got to have. And it was because I was not respected in my friend group. I was not respected in my community, my relationship, my job. It was the only thing I really felt that I had control over. I could call Papa John's or go through the McDonald's drive-thru. I could order something and they wouldn't ask me why I wanted it. So that didn't change when I lost all the weight. I still had a lot of those same systems that made me feel like I didn't have control. So I think that's where I'll put my marker there, is that I wish everybody who wanted to lose weight could have the body at the end for a day, because maybe it would change their perspective on what they worked on the way down.
It feels overly simplistic and maybe too much of an individualized question, but maybe it's extrapolatable to others. But what did you do? What fundamentally did you have to reconcile? What mental work did you have to do? And you can speak to your own personal experience or things that you feel you work on often with clients who come to see you.
What I tend to work on, I'm very lucky in the sense that I think when people choose to work with me, they know what it is that we're going to do. They're familiar with my work enough that they are inclined to want to work with me. So I don't hardly ever get somebody calling me asking about how to track calories. We'll get there, and sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But I've got people that we've never talked about weight loss that I'm working with. And I've got the people who have lost 40, 50 pounds with me. Like it's very interesting, but the one through line between all of them is that they came to me speaking negatively about themselves, and I think needed permission to be a little kinder about it. So, you know, just like when I came in here just a moment ago and we started talking, and you'd said some very kind things for me, and I had a little trouble accepting it, but I did accept it. And it that couldn't have happened a year ago, you know, or a year and a half ago. That's something I've had to build. And this process is not easy, but it certainly gets a lot easier when you're not criticizing yourself the whole way through. And that's what I try to work on with people, is how can we go about this and recognize you will fail sometimes. But as many times as you fail, you will succeed. And both times, you are still human. You're still a person trying. And you should be commended for such.
I think it's a difficulty of people who will nod along with everything you're saying and really be like, yeah, I get what he means. I can't shake that part of me that also has an external goal, an aesthetic goal, and an internal mental happy. Ultimately, I like to think that what I do is quality of life coaching, and improving someone's health and fitness can improve quality of life. It can also be, you know, maybe a net positive, but not the thing that you thought would bring, you know, just this happiness utopia. And so how do you talk about this reconciliation of having an external goal and not wanting to judge that, whether it's inherently okay to have external goals or not, while also saying, I know I also have, you know, room to grow from a baseline level of optimism, from a self-talk, from a, you know, personal growth standpoint. How do we have both of those at the same time?
I think a misconception about some of my work, and I know that from the comments that I get sometimes, where people think that I'm promoting not changing or not working on yourself. But I always flash the picture of me where I've changed quite a bit. You are not only very much allowed to have an external goal, but that's one of the great things that you get at the end of the journey is a different body. But what are you going to do with the body when you get to it? Because that I didn't have any plans for that body when I got it. I just wanted to get rid of the old one. Once I got the new one, I'm like, what the hell am I do with this? What am I supposed to? Okay, so I have it. It hasn't fixed anything. So what now? So have the external goal, but have a goal of what you're going to do with it. What does your new life look like? What has changed between then and now, and what are you capable of that you were not capable of before? Do you want to continue living the life that made you big in the first place? Are the people around you still the people that you'd like to have around you? And I think for some of us out there, it's a guilty question to ponder, to say, I think the people around me maybe aren't the greatest people for me. Are you in a job that demands far too much of you, but you're locked in, you've been there too long? So it's, well, you can't change it now because you've got all this time under your belt. None of it do you need. You can change all of this, and I had to change all of this along with the external change. The external change wasn't going to stick until I fixed everything else. But yeah, have the external goal. Feel good about yourself. Take those pictures. Be happy about it. I just want to make sure that when they're taking those pictures, it's not for the people that made them feel bad in the first place. I want to make sure it's for the person taking it.
What are you most proud of? What do you do with yours? You know, what do you do with your new body that you are proud of?
Recently, I ran a 5K.
That's awesome.
I didn't think I would do that.
Hell
ever.
Yeah.
Do you know, are you familiar with the name Chris Terrell?
No.
No, I you should check him out. He's on TikTok. He's a really, really great guy. He was one of my inspirations along the final leg of my journey when when I actually had to gain some weight. I've had to gain weight back. A secret between you and me, don't tell anybody. But I'm not down 110 pounds anymore. I'm down like 90 pounds. I'm working on 85 right now. Because I want to be more muscular. I'll send you the picture later. I was not in good shape when I lost all my weight, but I ran a 5K with him, and I did not intend on running that 5K, but I made the mistake of starting the race next to Chris Terrell, and he looks over at me and he goes, "Hey, so you're gonna run this thing, right?" And he has a way of asking questions. That he's like, he knows what he wants the answer to be. And
you
he
know,
knows that he's asking.
You know what the answer, you know what he wants the answer to be. Yeah, everyone knows.
He just got this smirk. He's like, "So you're going to run this, right?" And I'm like, damn it, Chris. Okay, I guess I'm going to run it. And then I ran 3 miles for the first time basically ever. I'd never run a straight mile in my life other than, you know, school when we were forced to. I'd always take breaks in between. And that this is coming from, and the reason I mentioned this is something I'm proud of right now is because when I was at my heaviest, I couldn't bend over. You know, every time I dropped my car keys, I'd have to think about selling it. Like, I don't want to bend over to get that thing. Like, damn, that's far. That is far. And I think I had started losing weight around the time I was about to invest in one of those little grabbers.
Yeah, yeah, pooper, like a pooper was, scooper, like
yeah. With the little, you know, the little claw, the little claws, like that, yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah,
I was 23, Jordan. This is not someone who was old. I wasn't like supposed to be achy and tired and everything. It's because some people, I think, like, well, I'm just achy because I'm old. I'm hurting because I'm old. That's not a natural part of getting older. Yeah, there will be some pains and such in places that weren't before, but it's a lot of it is inactivity. I've got, and I mean, now I've seen it firsthand with some of my clients. They'll come to me with bad knees and now they're hiking, you know, and everyone I work with is older than me. So age is not a death sentence, but, you know, death is a death sentence.
Did you have to have and face some of those hard questions of not just changing or working on how you would view yourself, how you would think about yourself, what sorts of things you would be proud of, but also things about your environment, your social circle, people around you. Some of those things are incredibly challenging. Like you said, I mean, it's one thing to change what we want and reshuffle our own priorities. It's another thing to be met with that sort of external resistance. Sometimes it's, you know, more direct resistance, but other times it's you are somebody who feels like you have momentum and you feel like the others around you make it such that you're moving through quicksand a little bit. Like, it's not necessarily that you're being met with like such direct opposition to your goals, but if the people around you aren't necessarily on the same wavelength, sometimes it can feel like, you know, you're a little bit running up the escalator that's going down sort of feeling. Did you have any of those scenarios?
Oh, yes, of course. And I talk about that all the time on how to deal with that kind of thing. In fact, I'm working on a weight loss guide that has nothing to do with weight loss at all. It's just how to manage the other things in your life. Like, rule number one, and I'm teaching a class about this currently. You don't get to finish this journey without pissing someone off. You know, typical conventional weight loss would not have that on the list at all. You don't get to finish this journey without pissing someone. Well, how's that supposed to help me lose weight? Well, there's people in your life that I'm not saying you have to start arguments with people, but there are people that are inviting you to lunch a couple of times a week. Some of you have a partner that'll tap you on the shoulder and say, "Hey, I'm getting DoorDash here. Want to get that?" with me? And you say yes, because it would be weird if you said no. And then you just have an extra 1,200 calories in your day because somebody suggested it. And well, sure, you know, if you're looking at the menu, you'll find something, right? But do you want to just eat because you found something, or do you want to eat because you wanted it? So some of those conversations are like, hey, I don't really want it. I don't know about you. I come from a very large, very food-friendly, very loving Italian family. You don't get to get away from the table without eating a little bit more. So it's maybe not pissing them off is a good word, but like, you're going to disappoint some people, and that's got to be okay. But there are some people you're going to piss off too, because suddenly you're living a different life and they don't like that. And you will get that opposition. You'll get that. Anybody that doesn't have your best interest in mind is not somebody you need to be listening to anyway.
Do you find that there's, in your experience, again, it could be clients, could be your own experience, that there's a spectrum of outcomes there, from people coming around and being, you know, first taken aback or rubbed the wrong way or pissed off and everything in that same bucket, that people end up coming around and people don't. You know, and there's, again, it's that can't be what you're doing it for, that you have to be doing it for you. But in your experience, did you find, you know what, at first there was this response, and over time, by, you know, continuing to be myself and set my values, I found a greater amount of acceptance and love and support? Or did you find that it went both ways?
The right people tend to stick around. They will sometimes come around, sometimes they don't, but in either case, it's for the best. You will get people that will either go along with you, or you'll get people that won't. And either way, you're living a new life. You can't just live the same life with a different body. The life that you have now is the reason you have the body you have. There's a lot of factors, but one of the big ones, I think everyone's heard of, you know, you're influenced by the five yeah. closest people to you and all that. It's very true. You will be very influenced by those people. Now, they can either come along with you or not. And it doesn't mean that they're bad people. I've got friends I don't speak with anymore, just because we live different lives now. Not because I think if we reconnected, we'd have a good conversation. But our lives are so different that there's really no occasion for us to be in that kind of contact constantly. So yeah, people come around, but if they don't, that's okay.
I think your partner, your spouse, is probably the most challenging version of this. In my personal life, I'm one for open, honest, direct, compassionate discussion with we don't have much time on earth sort of mentality. We don't have much time for subtleties. You know, we got to talk about this. Do you find, again, that's me personally, do you find that that's an approach you would recommend people who are in a circumstance of, hey, I'm looking to make X change. I'm being met with Y resistance from my spouse. And it's something that I'm harboring that I haven't spoken about. Are you suggesting, hey, let's have an open, honest discussion with this person? Or do you think that there are other things that person can do?
I suggest getting it out of the way as quickly as possible. Blow out fights, everyone. Blow out fights are the best way to go about this. Just come home yelling.
Just come home screaming.
Already mad. It's like, cool, we know what this is about. Hey, we're not wasting any time. Yeah, it's going to be hard because especially when I call them food partners in crime. I've had this. I don't know. Have you lost a bunch of weight?
Nope.
No. Well, you've had to clean up some habits, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've had food partners in crime and different partners with different values, and for sure.
Yeah, and it's like the late night snack run, trying to put that to bed. It feels like to the other person who's, you know, not the one initiating this, that maybe they did something wrong. Like, well, no, that's our time together. I like doing that. Okay, well, do you like the food, or do you like the time together? Because we can still spend that time together, but does it have to be? God, there was this one summer where 7-Eleven was making these ready-to-go pizzas in the middle of the night. And in my middle of nowhere town,
That was at 265 pounds. That was a hot commodity. So we would pull up there and we'd get a large pizza from there like several times a week. And then at a certain point, I'm like, well, I want more. So we started getting two pizzas. And I would have one. And then, you know, she would end up having half of hers or whatever. And then I'd end up starting to eat half of the other half of hers. So at a certain point, I'm like, well, no, I don't think I can do this anymore. Like that it's really not good. And she took offense to it at first, but you know, it's ultimately, it's just a matter of like, what are we spending this time together for? Is it for us or is it for the food? If it's for the food and you can't imagine spending time with someone without food in between you, it might be time to question that relationship. And that was a situation where I should have, but you know, yeah, it's the person may take offense, but yeah, just pose that question. Like, no, we don't have to not spend time together, but let's do something else.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah, and you said it. I mean, the outcome of that conversation is for the best in no matter what. Yeah. Yeah, it's challenging. There's a quote. I mean, it's applicable to maybe this specific thing. It's, and you mentioned it similarly with the job. It's that often what holds you back is something good. And so sometimes things are okay. And, you know, this is like one pain point and people, you know, remain in a job or a relationship that's, or friendship that's just okay, you know, and you have things that you don't love about it. And so you, but on the net, you know, it could be worse. And so you hold those things in. And yeah, I'm very blessed to have a partner that we have very open communication about stuff, but I certainly, this is something where I think one of the best ways to make, you know, the percent chance that the changes you're making are more sustainable for the long term is to have that conversation. I don't want to say is to have a specific outcome of that conversation, but it's just to have it and just to see how that goes, because there's no way you're, you know, in a family, in a home with a spouse, maybe children, going to do this by yourself without ever talking about it, without ever, you know, integrating it into your family, whether everyone is doing this with you or not, just holding that in and it's not going to be, I'm not betting on that being a sustainable plan.
No, people are not too privy to change, especially when they're not the ones to initiate it. So it's hard for you. And this is not to tell anyone or discourage anyone from chasing change because it's difficult for others, but it is difficult for other people around you. So one of the greater things that you can do for the people around you is you can either create opportunities, which is instead of like, there are some people, especially in our space, who have lost a bunch of weight and they forgot how much it sucks and they've gotten real pompous about it. And I'm like, you don't remember where you came from, do you? You don't remember how bad this was. And, you know, to criticize people who are trying to do this is wrong. But like to act like you're better than anybody else is also right. It's the greatest way to dissuade anyone from starting with you. So, you know, one of the things that I recommend to people is like, if you're trying to get other people to be good with what you're doing, instead of saying this is what I'm doing and you're just going to have to deal with it, show them why it's good. Show them what you enjoy. You know, if there's a meal that you really like, don't try to force it down somebody's throat. Make it for them. Don't present it under the guise of this is a weight loss thing, I'm eating this because it's healthy. If you enjoy it that much, it should present just as a regular meal, and everybody likes when you make dinner. So go ahead and do that. Don't say this is supposed to be healthy for you. Don't put that brain worm in there. Just same with, you know, whatever kind of movement you like. It's with, I love walking with anybody, not because it's good for my health, but because I like walking.
What was the first thing you started doing exercise wise when you, I mean, you could have been exercising that whole time, but was there a, oh, I got into lifting, or I got into walking, or I got into running, or I got into swimming, or I was playing tennis, or what was your foray into exercise? And has that changed over the course of the last few years?
it has very much changed as my goals have. When I was losing weight, I was still under the impression that cardio was incredibly necessary and it's the only way because our bodies are a closed circuit system and we don't burn calories until we move, that kind of thing. So I was biking a lot, excessively. And then I stopped biking and I just walked. And that was it. I didn't touch a weight. I wish I did. Jordan, I wish I was working out the whole time because I lost a lot of muscle mass along the way from the way that I was losing weight. But it was just walking. That was it. That's all I did. Now I'm in the gym because I want to put on muscle. I want to be stronger. But and I really enjoy it. But before that, I didn't enjoy the gym at all.
Let's talk about sustainability. It's something, it's a thread within your content, whether explicitly stated in posts or just in the background of this idea of, and you might, I'm not saying you phrase it so abruptly, but you very well might. If you can't do it forever, don't do it to lose fat. Now, I will give one more additional piece of context here because I think there's an inherent, you're going to have to eat less than your body needs, and you're probably going to have to eat less than maybe you'll ultimately be able to eat over the very long term if your goal is to sustain this forever, technically speaking. And so there is an element of baked in unsustainability. Like there are factually things you'll have to do to lose weight that, again, factually, meticulously won't have to be forever, right? Like you don't have to be in a deficit forever. Right. And I think we're all like, duh. Like, so, you know, cool. I'm eating a little bit less. So when someone's eating a little bit less than they might have to forever, technically they might make some changes that they maybe don't plan on in 100% magnitude doing forever. And so where do we draw the line as to like, what am I allowed to change? Even if I don't plan on to the fullest degree doing this thing, making this change forever and ever for the long term?
The way I do this with my clients is where we boil the frog together. You know, the old thing of boiling the frog where you put a frog into rather tepid water and then start to boil it slowly. It won't notice until it's too late. But obviously we're doing this for a positive outcome, not a negative one. It's when I say if you can't do it forever, don't do it, it's mostly, I really like that addition of like, well, yeah, you can't be in a calorie deficit forever. That's not going to be the case. But if you feel the clock ticking every day, if you're doing keto right now, if you're on carnivore, whatever it might be, and every day you're like, I cannot wait for this to be over, it will be over. It will end. And so will the progress that you achieved with it. Most likely in a lot of cases. There are some unicorns out there, but there's a lot of cases where if you went down very unsustainably, white knuckling it, it's you're going straight back up the same way you came. So I try to make it a couple times a month, I'll have a conversation with a client where they're frustrated with something, but they tell me in that moment how they dealt with it. In the frustration, and I'm like, you just solved your own problem. And in fact, this wasn't really even a problem at all. It was just something that your old self would have criticized. But as of you today, like this is progress for you. And you're doing it slowly and you're doing it sustainably and you're not crashing out over it. So that's really the difference of like, can you do this for a while to the point where it's not exciting? Because if it's not exciting for long enough, if you're just doing it at a 60% pace for a couple of years, at a certain point you just wake up one day and you're like, oh, I'm not fat anymore. What? Hold on. And you didn't feel it. That's what I'm trying to preach here is like, don't feel it and you won't want to fight it.
I think the context that I added is almost, it almost feels very secondary because I think, and not to sum it up, not to oversimplify your position, but like if you're going to, when we say do something to lose fat, we might not mean the minutia of like, you know, order the salad when maybe you would have gotten something else. Like maybe those are some swaps in the pursuit of fat loss that, yeah, you, those are fine. Okay, maybe you would have ordered something slightly differently. Of course, some of the nuanced nitty gritty things are going to have to change, but don't make big swings in your behavior that you know for a fact. Like you said, the minute you start, you're counting down the days. Don't go keto if you really love carbs and full on plan to eat carbs for the rest of your life. Don't, you know, necessarily intermittent fast if you're someone who really loves breakfast and knows that for the long haul, breakfast is probably going to be a part of your happiest, most sustainable life. Don't go carnivore, period, end of story, you know, or, you know, but I think the big things of the bigger the behavior, the more you should be able to see yourself doing it forever, the smaller, the little, you know, hey, maybe I would love to have a drink every once in a while, but, you know, when I'm trying to lose weight, and I'm, you know, maybe I do that less frequently, and you know, maybe in the long run, maybe the door's open to me to have a drink a couple times a week. But while I'm in this place right now, maybe I'm gonna round that down a tiny bit. Of course, some of the things that you're doing in this process don't have to 100% to the nth degree remain exactly how they are. But when the bigger the behavior change, the more you should think, am I gonna be able to keep this up forever?
Yeah, it's something where if you feel like, okay, this is, yeah, maybe it's not the most pleasant thing, but I'm not going to fall apart if I have to do this forever, is a different thing. That message is going out to people who hate waking up every day and doing what they're doing to try to get the results that they're getting. Because, yeah, there are some sacrifices that must be made when it comes to fat loss. However, I don't consider anything that I did along my journey necessarily to be a sacrifice, other than the terrible things that I did, you know, hurting myself. But like giving up 2 pints of Ben and Jerry's a night was not a sacrifice. I was drinking 6 cans of soda a night like an alcoholic. I was giving myself kidney stones like crazy. Couldn't figure out why they were showing up, you know. And then eventually, a doctor told me like, "Well, are you drinking soda?" And I'm like, no, you can't test for that, right?
Yeah. Did it come up in my pee? Like, you know?
Yes, it did. And I could hear it clink in the toilet.
Your piss looks like Mountain Dew. Like, we're pretty sure, you know? Like, yeah.
I think it's carbonated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was and even then, I was getting these kidney stones. I found out that's where they came from, and I'm still drinking it. Not because I enjoy it, but because I'm like basically addicted to the process. I don't really believe too much in food addiction, but we can be psychologically dependent on anything. And I certainly was. I was very much dependent. Anytime I'd stop, it was a mess. I'd think about it constantly. But that wasn't a sacrifice. So I think one of the other things in me saying this is like some people think that the lifestyle that they're coming to you and me to solve, giving that up is somehow a sacrifice. If it was, you wouldn't want to solve it. You wouldn't want to fix it right now. The binges that make you feel awful physically and mentally and, you know, put extra weight on your body and all that, giving that up is not a bad thing. It's just the only thing that you have right now. So the prospect of getting rid of it and not replacing it, adding something, you know, we can't remove to improve. We have to add things. It's not about weight loss. It's about happiness and gain. Of course, it seems bleak. We need to be adding new things into our lives to replace them.
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, there's no, to say that food does not bring happiness is a lie, right?
Oh, but, yes.
And I know you're not saying that. It wasn't meant as a correction.
Yeah.
But we're God, certainly in food. A place where we're, it's all too easy to use food as a coping mechanism. We've never had more easy access to hyper-palatable, really yummy stuff at the end of our fingertips that's cheaper and just incredibly delicious. And to use it to make us feel good is very easy. So like you said, that cool, like doing that less is a start, but we need to add things that are more healthy coping mechanisms. Was there something for you that was like, yeah, okay, I've replaced... or I've added, what was something important that you feel you added that brought happiness in lieu of using, you know, soda and food as a coping mechanism?
So I added, well, this is going to be, I think, more of a conceptual answer. I added choice. It used to be that I would try to cram everything in on a Saturday, on my cheat day, my special day where I got to have all the things I wasn't allowed to have. Those of you listening, I'm doing some air quotes here. Because who's telling you that you can't have it? Well, you are. Why are you telling yourself you can't have it? Because I can't control myself. Why can't you control yourself? Because the food is too good. Why is the food too good? Well, because it's very special. Why is it very special? Because that's what I do on Saturdays. Okay, well, do you think it would be that special if you didn't cram it into a day, if you could just have ice cream on a random Tuesday? I just had, Jordan, the most insane peach cobbler I've ever had in my life about 2 days ago. It was so much, I was about to cry sitting there. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this used to be I think it actually did happen on a Saturday, so ignore me. But it wasn't because it was a cheat day. It was because I chose it that day. When you give yourself the freedom of choice and food is not categorized anymore, it becomes less guilty. When I want something, here's the other thing. I've got the choice between I can go have the gross, like grocery store cheesecake, or I can go to a bakery and get a really good slice. I used to get those big 12 slice samplers, and I would eat like two or three of them in the car on my way home, still not having put on real pants. I'm wearing my sweatpants. Now I make like an afternoon of it. I just went into downtown Dallas a couple of weeks ago, and like I went there. I went to see the sixth floor museum where JFK was assassinated, because I'm a history buff. And I went and I had some really good cake at a bakery. It was just a part of my, I was spent like 4 or 5 hours out there, but it was part of my day. It was really, really good. So I had the choice between those two, and I have not craved cake since then, because I just had like a really good slice.
I think that also speaks to the sustainability aspect of, like, if you plan on having cake at some point in your life, the, you know, complete and utter abstinence of anything yummy during your fat loss phase probably doesn't increase your chance of succeeding once you bring yummy stuff back into your life.
Because it's, you've iconized it there. It's you're thinking about it constantly. Well, I can't have myself around that. I'll lose all of my control. Okay. How do you think that we begin to exercise control? We need to build that muscle. It's strength like anything else. Once you realize that it doesn't really have the power that you think it does, then it's not only making an appearance every once in a while, it'll start to make an appearance every once in a while. But if you're thinking about it constantly, you'll want it constantly. I don't want this food constantly. I have it when I want it. What I wanted has changed from before.
Let's a good segue to your Halloween candy spiel, which I've loved. I need more of it. I need more of it on my timeline, on my feed. You know, Halloween is a funny time, man. And I'm going to just say what I'm going to say, but like, and there's people in the captions that are going to would also be in the captions of this. In the comments. But like, on the scheme of like yummy stuff that you're going to eat, Halloween candy sucks. You know,
it's
like,
not good.
It's not good. Reese's is not good. I mean, listen, I'm not saying if I put the Reese's in my mouth that my mouth isn't like, oh, that tastes good. That's happening. Right. But like on the spectrum of shit that you can eat, like downstairs is like the bag of candy and it's like mini Twix, like a payday and like a mini Snickers. I'm like, this stuff sucks. Like this isn't, you know? And so, you know, I'm not going to take the words out of your mouth, but I'd love to hear your Halloween candy spiel. Cause it is timely as we're recording this on November 4th here.
Yeah. Well, this is when things are getting critical. This is actually when the messages should be going out around Halloween. I've got messages, and then within the week preceding it, I've got different messages, because we've got different kinds of candy as the days go on. So number one is, I've pulled up the list over here. If you wouldn't buy this with your own money, throw it out. If it's in front of you and somebody gave you a bunch of dots and hot tamales and all that kind of stuff, you don't want that. You wouldn't have bought that with your own money. Just get rid of it. And if you really want it that bad, you want Necco wafers that bad, go get them.
Nobody has ever purchased. I did Necco wafer remains afloat from like October 21st to October 28th, where people are panic buying random pieces of candy to put in a bowl that they leave in the front of their house. That's where Necco's like, there's like a little like Necco, like, ooh, like finally, like we're going to get back in the black, you know? Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, if you've tasted a Necco wafer, you know that it's probably a high margin of profit for them. It, whatever, they're just basically flavoring.
Tastes like
cardboard.
Robitussin. Like, I just feel like I'm taking, I feel like I'm like, it's almost, you know what they're doing? They're almost, I feel like they might be trying to make it taste bad on purpose. Like, there's something there. It's just, there's no way they were like, yeah. Like, I'm always imagining like a group of like people sitting around a boardroom and they all like taste it for the first time and they're like, yep. Yeah, take it to market. It's like, this can't be real. There's no way you guys thought this is it, you know? Yeah.
The Necco Wafer Corporation is a money laundering operation. 100%, 100%. That's what, there's no way that's their main source of income. They just like, yeah, no, it's the candy that we're making money from.
It's some economic scheme that I'm not sure I understand, which is like, if you make bad candy, like they, it's like they also own candy that tastes good and they're like, well, if we put both of these in, there's a net positive in terms of the relative enjoyment of the good candy because we also put this trash in there. Like, maybe we just, maybe they're just well above and beyond our understanding here.
They're their own spoiler. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, if you guys don't support predatory capitalism, then don't go for it. I know that the Necco people are really big fans of us, so
yes,
I just want to,
I sponsor
know.
Of mine, so we're about to.
Yeah. Oh, that's gone now. You're done.
I do really like the, and I just want to highlight that because I think if you wouldn't have bought it with your own money, and the truth is, like, you know that answer immediately because you probably have not had that thing in your house since last Halloween. No. So it's not like, oh, would I buy it? You could do that, but you could BS yourself. Yeah, I'd buy it. Yeah, I'd totally buy it. It's like, okay, but have you ever bought this before? It's like, well, No, you know, I still have last year's candy, you know?
Yeah, if you get a craving for it, go ahead and go get it, but you probably don't want it. And you made a good point about how it's really not that good. I say here as well, if you can get it at a gas station, it's probably not worth worrying over. You can, they're not running out of Reese's Cups. If you want them in July, you can go and get them. They're there. You can't get the pumpkin. You could probably go on Amazon and get 100%. The pumpkin ones in July if you wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because some people say that the different shapes make it taste different, which I think is true. But yeah, it's Halloween candy will make you hungrier. You know, because those easy to digest, simple carbs. The sugar, you get the spikes in blood sugar and all that. It's so, pair it with a protein source is another one that I've got. So like, I've got a thing here that says, you know what's better than a Snickers bar? A Snickers bar with a chocolate protein shake. You get an extra treat on top of it. But at the end of it, you're feeling good. You're feeling full. You're working towards your protein goals. I like mixing stuff like that.
Do you feel like I think that, I don't want to call it a cop-out, but I just feel like there's a food waste argument. First of all, food waste is a huge problem in our country and in the developing world, for sure. But if you wouldn't buy it with your own money, throw it out. If you wouldn't buy it with your own money, don't eat it. I think if you nodded along with that initially, then you know it's a waste going inside of you is also a waste. And going in the garbage, you know, you could call it a waste, but yeah, I think in a world where food waste is a problem, the hill I'm dying on for you throwing out Halloween candy that you got in the most absurd context ever, where you have more surplus of this than you could ever need or want and would never buy yourself. Don't think this is where I'm going to fight the battle of food waste. You know, how about you grab that bag of spinach that's been, you know, rotting in the back of your fridge for 8 months? How about you don't waste that? You know, don't worry about this, you know, Halloween candy that you have in a crazy surplus once a year.
Is wasting a 5-cent piece of Halloween candy that you don't like somehow more wasteful than the time that you've spent to make the progress that you've made? And why is it that candy is more valuable than your time? Because that's ultimately what this is. And this isn't, this dips a little bit dangerously into all calories are bad or whatever, but it's like, I want my calories to be good because they do matter. So I'm not super precise about things. I live in a window. I don't live at a decimal point. Nobody does. I want the things that I have to be good. And so I seek out good things. If I want to, like, I had a video do very, very well last year where I said I can have apple cider donuts anytime I want to have them. But, and I was at the grocery store. I saw them packaged there, and I'm like, I could have these half-assed apple cider donuts, or I could wait and go to the farm tomorrow. I could get them there, and it'd be even better. People in the comments were like, well, how do you track that one? You can't track the one at the farm, so checkmate. And I'm like, even if the one at the farm. Gotcha. Like, gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. Like, okay, great. You go and have six half-assed apple cider donuts for 1,200 calories. I'm going to go and have one for maybe 400 at the most. And it's like, I'm still picking the lower calorie option.
Yeah.
But they're like, well, because I can't track it, I'm going to eat the one that I can track, but I'm going to eat more of that. But because I can track it, it's okay.
Don't, let's not go down that road. That's like a.
Yeah, well, that's where I was for a long time. So this is just me letting you guys know that it's just make the good. You know what the good decision is. Six is going to be less good than one, probably. So go get the good one.
No, I like that. I think holding those to a slightly higher standard helps. Mm-hmm. Helps. Anything you want. Go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say they're not that good. The ones at the grocery store, they're kind of dry. It's like, I want the one that's like fresh. They're giving it to me. It came out of the fryer like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, just made the apple cider directly next to it. Warm apple cider, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Mike, you've been super grateful. You've been super generous. Different G word. Super generous with your time. Love chatting with you. Really hope people can give you a follow. You're doing amazing work. So why don't you drop a line, tell people where they can find you.
I don't want people finding me. It's too much. Got a lot of voices. You can find me on Instagram at Mike Needs a Plan. TikTok is at Mike Needs a Plan. Pretty much everywhere on the internet, you can find me there. I think I'm on YouTube. I've got a podcast. You'll never guess what the name is.
Mike Needs a Plan.
You can get that everywhere. I figured out one name and that's it.
Just roll.
You know, but the reason, and I'll give you this right before we go, if you have an extra minute.
Absolutely.
For me, and that is the reason that my name is Mike Needs a Plan is because even after losing 110 pounds, I know a lot of things. I had a friend correct me. I used to start my podcast by saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. I do know a lot of what I'm talking about. But even though I know all this stuff and I, you know, we could have had a similarly long and good conversation about the biology of this thing. I'm still asking questions. I'm still figuring things out. The things that I need day to day and week to week will change, and therefore I need a plan. So don't look to me and or look to Jordan and think that we have 100% of everything figured out. The reason we are successful is because we ask questions and we move forward accordingly. We know a lot of stuff. Jordan knows a lot more than me. But the greatest question you can ask is why. You know, so if you look to me with, you know, any modicum of respect, or you want what I have, or I'm an inspiration to you in some regard, understand that I'm not fully formed. Okay, like, so that's why the name is just a call out to the universe of like, no, I'm still growing. And I always will be if I'm doing things right. And if you're living your life right, you should be too.
I love that. I appreciate your time, man. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.